Welcome to Renegade Radio. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. We're brought to you today by Renegade Concepts and the good folks at Business Radio X. As always, we're discussing with business owners and panelists about ways they're breaking the rules of conventional thinking in the marketplace. And today we've got a great panel of guests who are going to talk to us a little bit about the international business model. We've got some people who sit on the board of the Netherlands Chamber of Commerce and have businesses, three of which are founded out of the Netherlands, one of which is working internationally, founded out of the U.S. And we're going to share some insights about what that's like, why they choose to do business here, and some of the parallels and differences between running a business in the United States and running it abroad. So I'd like to welcome to the show Corne Anches. He's with Ortec International, the CEO of that company. We have the Director of U.S. Corporate and Foreign Exchange from Western Union Business Solutions, Chris Hopkins. Ewout Kasse, he's the President of Van der Lande Industries in North America. And Ron van der Giesen, who's the Senior VP of Operations at CSM Bakery Products. Gentlemen, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So I'd like to begin. Let's kind of bring our audience up to speed and just talk about the Netherlands Chamber. As a business owner, I know a little bit about chambers. We have the Metro Chamber, the Greater North Fulton Chamber, the Gwinnett Chamber. When I think chambers, I think about chambers devoted to businesses that are here, but this is an international chamber. Tell us a little bit about what the Netherlands Chamber of Commerce is all about.
Well, it's a great networking event. There's a lot of companies interested in it, primarily Dutch companies, but the good thing is there's also quite a few American companies involved. So it's about 100 members right now, and we get together regularly, and we exchange information, help each other out. So in that way, we're all in the same boat, so to say, working internationally from the Netherlands. And so it's a good way to get information, to avoid pitfalls, help each other out, and get references, and make sure that we do good business.
Now, Chris, you said something interesting before the show as we were talking a little bit about the chamber. You said that you find a lot of chambers are very social-oriented, but the Netherlands Chamber is very business-focused. Tell us what that means.
Yeah, very much so. In Atlanta itself, there's over 30 binational chambers. And through our experiences, we've seen, just like you mentioned, that there are a lot out there that hold a lot of social events that take place at various restaurants and bars and things of that nature. But over the past few years in our experience with the Dutch Chamber, we found that there's a lot of good educational forums, business networking events, and things of that nature where you can come in and really learn from the participating members that promote their business and then other advantages or business advantages in the marketplace to maybe help these businesses trade and work with one another.
I see. So what are some of the advantages or benefits of being part of a chamber of commerce with an international focus? Don't everybody jump at one time.
I think what you'll see is if you branch out into the U.S. From a country like the Netherlands, there are differences. You can you can rely on other companies who've gone through that same process and learn from them and try to find out how you handle certain situations, how you handle large customer demands, how you handle your legal or your banking aspects. There's just things you don't know if you've never been in the U.S. market before.
I think another one that I found helpful is we've been here for quite a while now, so we don't get a lot of information that we don't know. But when you have 100 people, 100 Dutch people that get together, they all know other companies and other institutions and other people that can help you out. So it's been helpful to me where you can get not directly from the chamber, but through networking again, you can get very good sources of information.
Also, the chamber is not quite so large where you're going to have so many people. It might be overwhelming. It's really a good forum to share best practices, just like they mentioned.
Yeah, with CSM, we've been here since 1994. And it's not only being a part of the chamber and getting things out of the chamber, it's also what you have to bring. So new companies coming to America that we try to get in contact with right away and give them the right direction on how to be successful.
Now, how would a company like mine that is not a Dutch-based company and I don't actually do business in the Netherlands, how, if any way, would I interact or support or take part in the Netherlands Chamber?
Well, you, if you have Any interest, anybody can join.
Okay.
But typically, of course, only companies join that have somehow have an interest in international business or doing business in the Netherlands or mm-hmm. new Dutch companies that want to start here or sometimes also Dutch people that live here that start their own company here. So it's not a Dutch-based company, but they're local, but they're Dutch individuals. And so anybody can join, but typically there's always a link to the Netherlands.
I see.
Yeah, I think one unique point about the chamber is it's self-funded. So to be a member of the chamber, yeah, there's a fee to that. So there also needs to be a benefit, and I think that's also what Chris alluded to. It's a business oriented chamber and not so much social event.
Okay, well, makes sense. Well, let's learn a little bit more about what it is to work with a Netherlands company or be a Netherlands company working here. But before we get into that topic as a whole, let's dig in a little bit and introduce our audience to you guys individually as your businesses. Corné, let me start with you. Tell us a little bit about Ortec International, who you guys are and what you do.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. Ortec actually is a global company and we provide supply chain software. Been in business for a long time, for a little over 30 years. We've been in the US since 2000, so for 11 years now. What our software does is it helps our customers manage transportation and optimize transportation, and that allows them to operate more efficiently. Our customers will save money by optimizing their business with our software. Savings are in the range of 5 to 10% of transportation spend, so you can imagine large companies like Coca-Cola, Walmart, Home Depot, they're spending millions and millions of dollars every day on their transportation, and we will help them reduce that by millions.
So what are some of the pieces your software focuses on? If you're going to help me cut transportation cost, what are some of the key things that you guys are looking at?
We try to minimize waste, take waste out of the system. So we help companies drive more efficient routes.
Which, with fuel prices being where they are, is probably a huge importance.
Fuel prices continue to go up. I mean, it's one of the largest cost items for a company like Coca-Cola or Delta Airlines. So we help them optimize their distribution routes. We help them fill their trailers. We help them make sure they don't ship any air, but they really ship product.
So the higher the fuel cost, the better it is for his business.
It is, but if the fuel cost is a little bit on the high side, some companies don't have any money to spend, and they've gone through the transportation budget in the first 6 months of the year. So we do see that challenge as well.
Well, I thought this was an interesting statement. You said earlier that your company is unrivaled in your industry. That's a pretty bold statement in this realm. So
at this for more than 30 years. So I'd say worldwide we're the largest. In North America alone, we optimize more than 50,000 vehicles every day. That's still a small share of the market, but we work with the market leaders. Let's say Coca-Cola, Walmart, the largest retailer. 6 of the top 10 retailers worldwide use our software. 5 of the top oil and gas distributors use our software. The largest milk hauler in the U.S. uses our software. The largest casket distributor. I mean, you name it, market leaders use our software.
You have to stay with a pretty tight mathematical team, I would imagine, keeping up with all the algorithms and different data sources and points that you've got to put into the software because it changes on a regular basis, right?
Yeah, the relationship we have with academia is important to us. We work very closely with MIT, Georgia Tech, some universities in Europe. Our mathematics is what continue our innovation on the mathematical side allows us to continue to innovate and lead. Technology continues to evolve. We need to make sure that we're on the forefront of that evolvement.
What are some of the leading technology changes that you guys are researching and trying to stay on top of right now?
We're leading on the algorithm side. Real-time information, real-time mapping information, traffic information, that type of information, of course, impact your transportation. If you think 10 years ago, our optimization was more about planning. Today, it's planning and execution. It's a blended model. So companies will optimize and manage by exception and alerts from mobile devices today. So they have real-time visibility in what happens in the field, and they want to make changes in real time.
Do you guys do a lot of consulting with companies on some of those aspects? I mean, I would imagine just knowing what technology is out there and how mobile devices are changing the face of doing business, people need some insight on that process.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're often brought in to consult and help in the forefront, and then it evolves later on in companies adapting the technology and start using it every day.
Got it. So, Chris, let me pull you into the discussion now. Chris Hopkins, you're from Western Union Business Solutions. Obviously, most of us are pretty familiar with Western Union. We've been down once or twice and maybe wired some money or received some money, but that's not really where your focus is. Your focus is really on the currency exchange markets. Is that right?
That is correct. And while we're not a Dutch company, but we are very much an international company, our footprint and office extend in over 200 countries around the world, and we manage on a daily basis over 140 currencies daily. Western Union has been in business for 160 years and moving money internationally for over 130. And, you know, we do a lot of business in and around the European region, and we do have offices in the Netherlands and work with a variety of different industries within the Netherlands. And so that's, you know, primarily how we stay in tune and how we got involved with the Dutch Chamber as well.
So tell us a little bit about the foreign exchange markets right now. I mean, what's going on with foreign currency and how is that affecting business coming out and into the U.S.?
Well, over the past 5 years, we've probably seen the most volatility in the currency markets. And, you know, say 10 years ago, companies didn't have to manage the foreign exchange risk as closely as they do today because, you know, a 1% and 2% swing that we see on a daily basis between just, say, the euro and U.S. dollar, that can really eat into the bottom line of a business if they're not controlling their costs or protecting their profits.
So how do you guys help companies with that? What type of advice or services or consulting do you give so that, you know, they do take the most advantage of the capital markets that they're facing?
Well, our market and our advantage within in the FX marketplace, it's so niche. So it allows us to, number one, understand our customers' needs a little bit more closely than perhaps maybe a bank would, just because, you know, foreign exchange typically lies, you know, far down the list on the bank's high priorities. So we're able to understand the customers' needs, understand their exposures, and then through various foreign exchange products and derivative products is at the same time, we're able to help them navigate the waters.
So let's talk about those particular pitfalls. I mean, what are some of the risks that are associated with doing business internationally in these currency markets that, as a business owner, we need to be aware of?
Well, the greatest risk today is the political and economic factors that affect the currencies. Obviously, there's a lot going on throughout Europe, specifically with Greece right now. But, you know, right behind Greece, we've got Italy and Portugal and Spain that will have to be dealt with. We've got a very big debt problem and debt ceiling issue here in the U.S. I would say that the only thing that's helping the U.S. dollar today is Europe and what's happening there. There's no truth behind the strength of the U.S. dollar because of what's happening here. It's really the effects of things that are happening in Europe.
Gotcha. So what types of companies are you engaging in this currency market? Is it primarily large companies, or are you finding that there's an onslaught of small and mid-sized companies that are beginning to reach out internationally that need this type of consultation and services?
We focus in the mid-markets. Our sweet spot where we have the greatest advantage is between 50 and 500 million in revenue. And you know, most of these companies are bi-national, bi-trade, bi-office. So what they have to do periodically are fund operations overseas or particularly repatriate profits. And then we'll also work with very small outfits that may buy 100% of their product from a manufacturer in the Netherlands.
Now, you mentioned that your company also works with advanced technology and alternative resources to better understand the economic markets and conditions. What type of technology is really key to understanding these markets?
Well, our product line and our focus is in foreign exchange, but in able to act on it and take advantage of it, you've got to have the payment and receivable mechanisms to trade currencies and send and receive funds. So what we offer is an ability for customers to access these currencies real-time 24/7 and then actually deliver and receive these currencies in over 140 currencies.
All right, very interesting. So, Wout, let me bring you in, and let's talk about Vanderlande Industries, and you're the president of the North American operations side here. Tell us what you guys are all about.
Well, I could probably best explain that with maybe a few examples. When you check in at an airport, and you give your bag to the airport, then it goes down into the basement. You never see it again, right?
That's what I was thinking.
Well, we built the baggage handling systems in the basement of the airport. So all the conveyors, sorters, scanners, computer systems, security that has to do with that handling of the bag to the airport, to the airplane, that's what we build. So there's a fairly large project, and they're very, I would say challenging, because you typically, you know, you have an operational airport, so you're basically building these systems while business goes on. And so we always say, performing open heart surgery while the patient is running a marathon. You know? So a lot of night work and a lot of challenges, a lot of involvement from the airlines, the airport authority, the TSA. So stakeholder management, challenging. So airports is one part of the business, and then we build distribution centers, the inside of it. So the you know, the storage and retrieval systems, the sortation again, and the picking system. So you know, companies that deliver to your home. You know, when you order something online, like Amazon, they fulfill in their centers the orders, and so we take care of those orders. And then subsequently, when they're shipped by a company like, for instance, UPS, we build the sort centers for companies that sort and handle the product.
Those are massive operations. I mean, I don't know, some of our listeners have probably never been inside of one of those types of facilities, but I have, and it is amazing the operations that go on behind the scenes. How do you guys size up these projects and really help companies get a handle on running something of that magnitude?
And that is, you know, just building it is one big challenge, and you go from project to project, so it's really a volatile business. But just building it is one challenge, and then subsequently, just like you said, taking it into operation and making sure that the client uses the system appropriately, sometimes that is a big challenge, right? If you go from a manual handling system to all of a sudden fully automated, that can have a challenge. So we help the customer with the implementation of that. You know, and a good way to do that is to offer the operations and maintenance of the system actually afterwards. So,
what do you find to be a larger piece of your business? Is it the operations and maintenance after, or is it new projects coming online, companies either putting a new, you know, facility in, or maybe they're overhauling an existing facility like an airport who's replacing their infrastructure?
Well, right now, projects is a bigger volume of our business, but we're really focusing on the operations and maintenance, and a few years ago, that business was zero for us. It's really catching on right now, and I think, in the next years, it I don't think it will outgrow the project business, but it will be really sizable.
I see. So who are some of your largest clients that you guys work with?
Well, our two largest clients in North America are right here in Atlanta, UPS and Delta. And that's one of the reasons why we decided to have our office in Atlanta. But so those are the two largest clients.
And what size is your company? How many people do you employ, for example?
We have roughly 350 people right now in North America. Mm-hmm. Most of those in the U.S. and some in Canada, some in Mexico. They're all over the country because we do, like I said, we build projects. So we're on project sites. Right now we have a lot of people in New York, in Las Vegas, and several other locations. And then we have a lot of service sites where we take care of the operation maintenance. So we have people there permanently at the airports and DCs.
Are the bulk of those people on the project like consulting and design side, and then you're outsourcing the people who are actually building it, or are these guys out there actually feet on the street?
A little bit of both. We have all the designs are done in our house, sales engineers, etc. The execution people, like engineers, project managers, site managers, they're all in our team. But when it comes to the physical installation, you know, the millwrights, electricians, we hire those locally.
So what's the competition like in your space? Are there competitors in your space, or a few, a lot?
Well, I would say, and this may sound strange, fortunately there are competitors, because I always say that if you don't have competitors, or if you don't have good competitors, you become complacent and you become lazy. And so we have a few. We also have quite a few competitors who don't do a very good business. And sometimes that hurts us a little bit, you know, the image reputation of the business. But I'm actually happy to say that there's some good competitors, and there are some that aren't very good. But we're able to hold our own and have a good market share. We have about, in the baggage handling industry, we have about, I would say, 30-35% of the market.
Gotcha. What makes you stand out against the competition? You know, how do you guys stay different?
It may sound, you know, very simple and easy, but we just make sure we deliver and we listen to the client, and it's all about customer satisfaction. We have a motto that says delivering certainty. So make sure that you do what the customer is expecting and then a little bit more. So build your systems, build the projects on time, make sure that there's not a lot of interruption at the facilities, and just, you know, outperform your competition. And always do a little bit better than what your client is expecting. And it sounds simple. Most of our competitors aren't doing it.
Yeah, surprisingly, I think you're right on target, though. It's the execution piece. We had someone on the show a few weeks ago, and we asked what the secret of their business was from the sales side. And in a word, he said, hustle. Our guys get out there and they hustle, you know, and a lot of people don't. So,
One simple example: we had a maintenance contract out on the West Coast in California. It was awarded to us on December 26th of last year, and we had to be live on site, operational with people on January 1st, and we made it work. And that was there's a few interesting days between December 26th and January 1st, of course, that make it extra challenging, but we got it done, and the client is over the moon.
I mean, we see the same, right? Our customers are our best salespeople. Happy customers will add and create new customers.
Exactly. I think that's the key thing, and especially in our business. If you build a project, in a system for Delta Airlines at a location, and of course we do a lot of work for them here in Atlanta, then subsequently they have other work, and they come to you because we deliver.
Well, talking about happy customers, let's come over here and visit with Ron Vandergeesen. Ron, you're with CSM Bakery Products. I got to imagine that baked goods, cakes and pies and sweets and brownies and cupcakes and all the stuff that you guys do, that's got to put some smiles on some faces. Tell us about you guys.
It puts a lot of smile on a lot of faces. CSM is actually a baking company, and it's actually the biggest bakery company in the world. We're operational in Europe. We're operational in America, of course, but also in the Middle East and the Far East. So what you see in the whole business concept is, for us here in America, is bringing concepts from Europe to America. One of the concepts that we're currently working on is the whole health and wellness movement. So if you look at what Michelle Obama is doing, working actually with the CTC here in Atlanta, we try to design products, low-calorie products, better-for-you products, that you can buy in those normal bakeries. That's unconventional thinking for us. So if you look at our business, bakery products here in North America, we're here with about 5,000 people. And we have three different companies. We have Bakemark, who is a distribution company. We got Caravan Ingredients, who is an ingredient company, delivering very special ingredients to the bakery industry. And then, of course, there's bakery products, CSM Bakery Products. And we make finished goods. So we make anywhere from dry mixes to muffins to scones, cupcakes, decorated cakes, anything that you can buy in bakery, basically, we produce. Now, to give you a kind of an opinion, last year, bakery products only, finished goods bakery, we produced about 1.1 billion pounds.
Wow.
So just to give you an impression on how much bakeries there is. It's all, of course, commercial bakeries. A lot of big ovens, a lot of volume, big customers. I mean, we do business with Walmart as well. But for example, if you look at our business with Starbucks, I saw somebody come in with a Starbucks cup here. All the scones and muffins that you buy at Starbucks are basically produced by bakery products.
Gotcha. Now, are you seeing this? I mean, you're right. You're talking unconventional when you start talking about healthy and baked goods, because you know, my mind immediately says you can't put them both together. It can't be healthy and taste good and be right. A baked good. They just don't work. But obviously, you guys are working on that. Are you finding that demand? Is it driven around the globe that way? Is it primarily the U.S. that's looking for that healthy market? What are you seeing dispersed as far as demand?
No, I think the health and wellness movement in Europe is far ahead of what you see here in the U.S. And that's why we can learn from what's happening in Europe and bring concepts from Europe here into the United States. But to give you an idea, we have a new line on the market, a new product line called Sensibly Indulgent. Just think about a brand name for a minute here. And there's four different products. We looked at booby pies. We looked at cupcakes, iced cupcakes. We're looking at cookies and we're looking at brownies. Now, that doesn't sound like healthy to most people. Give you an example on the cupcakes. a normal cupcake has about 350 calories in it. We bring a sensibly indulgent cupcake. It's a little bit of a smaller cupcake, but it's got a full dollop of icing on it. It's got all sorts of great technology that we can tap into because CSM is a global company, and that cupcake only has 80 calories. So to give you an impression on how you can deal with calories, how you can deal with health, excellent taste, excellent flavor release, great products, and we're just starting now this year to bring that into the U.S. market.
Now, is there an educational side to your business? And primarily what I'm thinking about is this. I mean, you talk about an 80-calorie cupcake. Problem that I see in the U.S. is that you give somebody an 80-calorie cupcake, and they think, oh, great, I can eat five of them now.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You're no better off than
that
eating...
That must be real great for your business.
Well, I didn't want to use this as a unique selling point. But yeah, of course that's happening. And what you do see, though, more and more in America, you see that even in the fast food restaurants, when you get a meal, when you order a meal, the calories are now up on the board. So people are getting more and more conscious about the calories. And we do realize if you bring calories down to a very low level, people will eat two or three, which of course is good for business.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, okay, a little bit of psychology behind the sales there. All right. Now, are you, again, going back to this educational question, are you finding that again, your market is getting smarter in the sense that they're learning food's not the villain? You know, we've heard so many people for years talk about food being the villain, and really, I think we're our own villain. People sit on their butts, they don't do anything, they don't exercise. I mean, you can eat healthy foods, and if you're lethargic and don't do anything, you're still not going to be in great health.
Right.
So do you find you're out promoting that, or are you guys putting that message out as well?
No, we're not so much in the health business by itself. We are a food company, we specialize in foods, so we try to ride the trend when it comes to health and wellness. And it's actually a major pillar in our strategy and design products that would fit that profile and it would fit the lifestyle of people that actually do want to lose weight or at least don't want to gain any weight.
Gotcha. Now, you guys are obviously a large company. You produced over 1 billion pounds of baked goods. How many people does it take to run an operation like that?
Well, I got CSM in global has about 9,000 people. We have about 5,000 people here in America, of which 3,200 in bakery products. So it's about 3,000 people. We have 12 factories around the country. So it's anywhere from California to Utah. We're in Texas, Houston. Like I said, all around the country, South Carolina, Atlanta, of course. The reason we chose Atlanta here has a little bit to do with the history of the company. It's a couple of privately owned companies that were already headquartered in Atlanta. But of course, the advantages of Atlanta for us are that we have a great tap into knowledge. There's a huge population here of 20-year-olds, professional 20-year-olds that we can tap into. Besides that, you got three different business schools around. You got Georgia Tech around. It is the main hub. So, you know, you got Delta here. So it's easy to travel to all the different points. So Atlanta is just a great place for us as a business to be.
Well, that's a great segue. And let's bring the rest of our panel back in on the discussion here. And let's toss that out to the table and let you guys all kind of jump in here. Why did you guys decide to set up shop and do business here and specifically headquarter your North American operations out of Atlanta?
In our case, it's there were several reasons. Some were mentioned already, you know, the location, Atlanta Airport, having direct flights to any city in the U.S. You know, that's a huge benefit for us because most of our projects are not here, but you know, across the country. So being on the East Coast, you know, with the time zones with the Netherlands, that helps. And if you have a choice, where do you go? You could go to the Northeast, you know, very expensive, et cetera. And if you have a low cost of living and you have a great resource pool here, with a lot of good engineers and good business people, IT people, then why not Atlanta? And, of course, in our case, also, some of our largest customers are right here.
I think, you know, just the airport alone, it is a two-hour flight to 80% of the United States from Atlanta-Hartsfield. That coupled with the port in Savannah, and, you know, obviously the cost of living, it really drives a lot of people here. And the climate, from a personal perspective, right. You truly get four seasons here. You're 2 hours from the mountains. You're 5 hours from the coast and from the Gulf. So it's a great family living as well.
Yeah, well, the winter season is the shortest season. That's never hurts.
Yeah, I'm not a cold weather guy, so I like it when we move back into spring.
But for us, I think most of the reasons have been mentioned. But Atlanta is a logistics and a supply chain hub. And it's a talent pool. Georgia Tech, Georgia Southern. We have we can find good people here.
Yeah, you guys have all brought that up. So let's dive a little deeper there. I mean, so the talent pool. I mean, what are you finding to be the most valuable people that you're pulling? I heard IT and engineering. Is that where you guys are primarily focused on pulling good talent?
Yep. In our case, it is engineers. You know, we're an engineering company. And by the way, we're still looking for people. We've continued to hire people in the past 2 years. You know, even through the downturn and everything, we have continued to grow. And we're currently still looking for good mechanical engineers, controls engineers, but also project managers.
Right. Yeah, I think in our case, like I said, we're looking for technical people and business people. So you got Georgia Tech, and we have multiple people working with us from Georgia Tech that are actually now in international career development. But you're also looking at the Georgia State, of course, the Terry College of Business, and we got Kennesaw State with great talent that we employ.
Yeah. So when we think about people coming in the IT pool, I've heard that Atlanta is a huge IT hub. What are some of the positions, I guess, you guys are finding most valuable and best filled out of the IT talent pool here?
Part of our solution, this is Ortec, part of our solution is embedded in SAP as an ERP system. So we deliver it outside of SAP or inside of SAP. But that SAP expertise is relevant, and Georgia Southern has a good SAP program, so their graduates are actually pretty well educated to start with us successfully pretty fast.
So let's shift gears on that a little bit. And as we talk about hiring people here, being Netherlands-based companies or working in the Netherlands, as Chris's group does, what are the differences, maybe challenges even, that we're going to face as a North American employee working for an international company, and maybe even to the other side? And Wild, I know you and I discussed this earlier, the differences in managing a company based here in North America versus managing a European company.
Yeah, I think there are some very interesting differences, and if you know them, then you can work with it and take it to your advantage. One difference, there are quite a few, but a big one for me always is that where in Europe, and let's take specifically the Netherlands, people, managers, employees are very proactive, are very much thinking of how can I do this better, or how can I do things around me, you know, in a better, smarter way. And in the U.S., I see a little bit of a difference where people basically wait until they're told what to do, and then they will do exactly that, nothing more, nothing less. And so, but if you know that, and you can work and coach people and train them and tell them, you know, this is, I want you actually to do more, and not just do that. Now, the advantage to that, the flip side of it is, if in Europe you would say, all right, this is the direction we're going, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to take this on, and we're going to make it a success, and it better be done by that date or by that hour, otherwise, you know, something's going to happen. People will say, are you kidding me? We're not doing that. We got weekends, we got vacation planned, and I'm not doing that. Where in the U.S., if you tell people we're going to take this hill, then they will do it. They will do it with a lot of optimism and enthusiasm, and things will get done. So you can take that to your advantage if you know those cultural differences. And the examples I'm giving are really true, and in some cases, you know, very extreme, that you really have to work with people to make a change.
Ron, Cornet, what about you guys? How do you see the differences?
Yeah, on the leadership side, I think there's differences. If you think about Ortec, we're in Atlanta, is the same way. We're a melting pot of cultures. I mean, we have people from all over the U.S. or all over the world who have moved to Atlanta over the years who join us and like that flavor of an international company where you can job rotate and you could work in our Paris office for a year or in our Sydney office in Australia. So you have an opportunity to have a career, international career with Ortec. And we offer the same for our people from the Netherlands or Germany who would come here for a couple of years. So that type of mix of cultures is pretty interesting and fun to manage.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest differences I see between America and Europe is also what Ewald said, is the productivity. And people really being engaged in the business, really trying to improve every day. I think one thing on top of that is behavior. If I look at typically the Dutch culture, and gentlemen, correct me if I'm wrong here, but Dutch are pretty much pretty direct, pretty open, sometimes even blunt. But it leads to a culture, it leads to a working environment where people are really honest and really open to each other, and there's no hidden agendas, which for an American in Europe is difficult to work with. For a European here, it's easy, but sometimes you offend people.
Right. Well, I offend people all the time myself. So right. I don't think it has anything to do with being Dutch or not. But Chris, what about you? Looking the other direction, so obviously Western Union based here in the U.S., but doing business abroad, what are some of the differences you see?
So I'll say that, you know, in dealing with various Dutch companies, the thing that I like the most is that, you know, when you're dealing with the decision makers and the C-suite executives, it's always about business and getting down to business. What's your value proposition? What can you do for us? And you know, what are the differences? And then looking back over here on the state side, you know, across the United States, you've got various different cultures based on regions. So here in the South, you might have someone that want to talk about football or someone that's going to talk about their family versus, you know, talking directly about business. And then you get up to the Northeast and you get into Boston and New York, and, you know, it's straight to business as well. So I think understanding not only the cultural differences over across the pond, but also understanding the ones here in the U.S., depending on what region of the U.S. is also very important, too.
Well, that's an interesting topic, just because March Madness is in full swing right now, so it kind of makes me think, and I don't know how sporting events affect the European workplace, but I was reading an article where they said that they expected, I think, $1.8 billion in lost productivity to occur in businesses across the United States because of office pools around the March Madness basketball tournament. Employees, you know, that would be focusing on their brackets rather than focusing, you know, on work. You know, what are there events like that shake the European workplace?
There's only one.
Wait only until one. The summer.
Soccer.
Soccer's it.
That's it.
Yeah, we'll lose productivity this summer if we have to play Germany. We'll have a German-Dutch match and everybody in our office will be watching.
I mean, to paint a picture, in Holland, when Holland plays Germany for any world or European tournament, the whole of Holland shuts down. Everybody goes outside. Televisions are outside. Streets are being painted orange, like your shirt today. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's not madness. It's just way beyond that.
Right, right. But it's a friendly environment, though.
It is a very friendly environment, yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, basically you shut down the street, so you put a couple of cars on the street so nobody can pass by. You go on the street with your neighbors, everything is orange, you put your chairs outside, put televisions outside, of course a couple of fridges for the beer.
Right,
and just watch the game. And nobody works and everything shuts down.
You know, in the European workplace seems very conducive to, let's get done what we've got to get done, but let's balance that with time off. Whereas, you know, while you were talking about kind of, you know, us here in the U.S., we're kind of 60-hour, 80-hour, 90-hour a week, you know, advance, move on, whatever. But we'll only go as far as we're told to go sometimes, which really separates our employee market and our entrepreneur market. How do you manage those two different cultures? I mean, because obviously you're reaching back across to the European markets, but you're managing people here. How do you bring those two people onto the same page?
I would say that's impossible. It's very, very difficult. If we want anything done from the Netherlands, and we have this attitude in our office here, you know, with and including the few expats that we have, we all have the same attitude. You get things done, and if a client wants something done by a certain date, you just get it done, no matter what. And when you call on people in Europe, it's all about how can they fit it around their, you know, schedules, you know, business schedules and other things. So it's very difficult. And in many cases, it takes a phone call from me to certain people in the Netherlands to get things done.
So what advice would you guys offer someone here in the States or someone in a foreign country, maybe the Netherlands, that's looking to expand operations across the waters? What advice would you give them on getting into that market, some of the challenges they're going to run up against, or just things they need to be aware of based on the experience you guys have with this?
Well, I think the best advice is join the chamber and network.
That's a paid endorsement, but no.
No, but honestly, get to know companies who've done it before and people who've done it before, right? So you can continue to ask for advice, and we'll be more than happy to provide advice. You know, it's a give and take.
Is the chamber good at facilitating that, kind of a little bit of a mentor relationship, helping companies understand how to bridge those gaps? I know, Chris, you talked about it being very business-oriented. Is that part of the cycle?
Absolutely, and right. I think that what that does is that generates additional talks in the marketplace about how, you know, say one company was successful, they'll mention that to another, and then that kind of, you know, it just cycles itself and brings more attraction to the chamber.
You know, we hear so much about the economic climate here in the U.S. and sometimes abroad. Is it a good time right now to be looking to expand international, or if you're a foreign company looking to expand here in the U.S. based on the economies?
I don't know. I guess when I'm looking at the baking industry, I would say yes.
Well, it depends a little bit what business you're in. I mean, people always need to eat. And it depends a little bit on...
I don't know if they need to.
Well, people will always
We got a few people here that could do without a couple meals, I'm just saying.
Thank you.
Cornet, I wasn't looking at you when I said that.
No, I think when economy slows down and you're, you know, in airport transportation and security systems, I would say, you know, if people start to realize that with a slowing down economy that capital investments are going down, mm-hmm. then it might not be a good time to invest. But it depends also a little bit on your product. If you got a unique product, there will always be a market for it.
Well, just like you, I mean, I believe Europe is ahead in our business versus the U.S., so we can bring innovation into the U.S., and there's a demand for this type of change.
Right.
If you're in construction, I wouldn't want to come to Atlanta today. But, yeah, it just depends on what business you're in.
Yeah, right. If you look at in our industry, the distribution centers, that business is booming. Because, you know, like we said before, you know, distribution centers for food items, healthcare, that is growing, actually. So that's a good part to be.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I mean, from what I gather, all four of you are in a growing industry right now and in an expansion phase where you're actually hiring people and adding jobs. Is that right?
Correct.
Yep. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's do this. Let's recap for our audience just a little bit about your company, how people can get in touch with you. So, Cornet, let me start with you. Just tell me, you know, again, the highlight of your company and how someone would come about getting in touch with you if they thought they'd be a good fit to do business with you.
Yeah, so our customers are typically the ones, like I said in the beginning, who have a larger transportation spend and can truly have and retrieve value from using our software. So we're typically talking about the Fortune 2000. You have a multi-billion dollar revenue line and you have hundreds of millions of transportation spent. I would just go through our website and contact us if you believe you're interested in trying to build efficiency in your current logistics operation.
So what's that website? How would I go about finding it?
Ortec.com, ORTEC.com.
All right, fantastic. Chris, highlight Western Union for us, who you're looking for, and how do we get in touch with you?
Sure. Our target audience is, again, that mid-market, 50 to 500 million in revenue and above in certain circumstances. And we focus on the multinational organizations that have one need, and that's to manage foreign exchange risk.
Fantastic. Hey, Wout, highlight for us and tell us how we get in touch with you.
Well, you know, as I said, building projects, for distribution centers, airports, I doubt whether, you know, anybody's going to come to me from this broadcast here and say, hey, I need to build a new airport and I need a bag system. But if you want to get in touch with us, whether it's for employment or otherwise, the best way is a website, and that's, it's one word, VANDERLANDE, vanderlande.com.
All right. Thank you very much. Ron, tell us how we find out about these fabulous baked goods.
Yeah, right. If you want to get in touch with CSM, the best way is to do that to our website as well, csmglobal.com. And that's, of course, for customers. We're a one-stop shop for bakeries, small bakeries, but also bigger commercial bakeries. And we have great career opportunity, not only here in America, but like I said, international. A lot of people moving to Europe, Middle East, and Far East. If you're interested, csmglobal.com.
And one last thing for our listeners. One of you guys, tell us, how do we get in touch with the Netherlands Chamber if we're interested in meeting companies that are coming from the Netherlands or we're looking to expand operations there, or maybe we're Dutch people, as you said, and we're looking to get with like-minded business people. How do we go about finding the chamber?
The website. It's NACCSE.org.
Fantastic. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for being on the show today, sharing some insights with us about doing business in America as a Netherlands-based company, and we thank you for sharing about the Chamber. I know we've got some guests out there that are listening that will be very interested to hear that and know how they can link up with you. I want to thank everyone out there in the listening audience today for tuning in, and remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.